It's been about a month since I stopped Ozempic, and in the news today, I'm back on Ozempic. Listen to the episode to find out why. Charlene is busy breaking through her plateau, staying the course, and today we're talking about scams, fakes, compounds, and generics. Also, we've been banned on Meta. Welcome back to Ozempic Diaries. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Ozempic Diaries. This is, episode 16. And we're back after a two-week break to talk about our progress over the last 2 weeks, or lack thereof, or changes that have been made. There's a lot been going on. I'm Jonathan Vanka, and I'm here with
Charlene Armstrong.
Let's first start up by jumping straight into it. Charlene, what has been going on with you over the last 2 weeks?
I've been stagnating a bit, much to my frustration. From like the end of April, I was on 76.7. So that was like my 12-week mark, okay? 76.7, and I kind of just stayed and hovered and hovered and hovered there. And then I'm like 300 grams up, 300 grams down, 400 grams up, 700 grams down, kind of just like hovering in that space. And finally, this morning saw quite a nice, or it was actually not this morning, it was last week. Last week, I think I weighed not on my usual weigh-in day. I was just like, I don't know, my clothes feel a little bit looser, and my husband keeps commenting, "Yes, like you, I'm sure you've lost more. So I weighed, and I finally went below the 75 mark, which like for me, a big milestone was the 75. I just wanted to break that 75 mark on the scale. And I weighed, it was 74.9. And that was last week at some point. And I texted you and you were like, "Oh, thank God. I'm so happy for you, because I thought you were going to off yourself."
Yeah. You were getting quite bleak about it.
We're joking on a public platform now about something that's actually quite a serious topic, someone offing themselves. But please don't cancel us. It's just in jest conversation. We're not making light of a very serious topic. Anyway, so jokingly you had said that to me, and I found it humorous, because when you're on such a plateau for so long and you just cannot understand why is this happening? And yeah, I weighed this morning and I'm still 74.9. So it's like literally 100 grams under my 75 mark, but under is under. And I was on 76.9. So it's a nice little jump. And yes, we've spoken before about the like whoosh effect where you hold on to it. And you hold on, and then all of a sudden it just drops. But I will also just say to the listeners that I've been reading a lot about plateaus, and we've discussed it on the show before, but somehow I still have to remind myself, and I have to just be patient with the process. And I kept saying to my husband while I was stuck in this plateau, I kept saying to him, "I just got to trust the process. I'm going to forget the number on the scale, because I have to remember my muscles are probably also holding on to water, because I'm training. When I'm in the gym, I'm pushing hard with the weights and I'm upping the weights. Each week when I'm there, I'm going up in weight slightly more. You know, I'm not just lifting the same kind of weights all the time. So I try and go, if I was on 5 kilogram dumbbells for bicep curls, then I go to 7.5. And like every 2 weeks, I try and increase my weight a little bit. So the muscles are obviously holding on to some water. So I just got to be patient, and I'm going to ignore this number on the scale, because I'm happy in my clothes. I feel good. It's not about the number on the scale. And then I get on the scale and the number's down under 75, and I'm like, yay! And I flip out. It's like, oh, what happened to that number?
What happened
scale
to the stoic? Completely. I'm exactly the same.
So tell me about you.
Yeah, same as you. You know, when I went through my plateau a couple of months ago now, I was also, you know, you post-rationalize the hell out of it, and you tell yourself that it doesn't matter, and to think about it, it's, you know, it's more telling on the month by month basis than it is a week by week basis, especially with people who are afflicted by this the gender of femininity, where you've got things messing around with your hormones and your water weights, and it's all crazy, you know. So I totally get where you are, you know, where you're at, and I've also been plateaued for a month now. The difference is that obviously I was off Ozempic, so I kind of expected that. And to be honest, it's the second best case scenario. If I'd kept on losing weight, I would have been like amazed. But the fact that I managed to just stay at around 88.8 for the last 4 weeks and keep it off was incredible. I'm a really, really good.
That's a great, like, big congrats to you there, because that means to me that those habits that you formed and the mindfulness about the things that you anticipated in, okay, what do I need to do to not put this weight back on? You succeeded there. That's a great success.
Yeah,
it's
a good result. Absolutely, yeah.
So if you imagine you had you on your goal weight, you had achieved your goal weight at the end of your however long period you were on it, that you now know the recipe for your maintenance strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely. And I do. I mean, I'm still going to post an episode I interviewed with one of our community members, Kim. We talk about habit stacking and keeping the weight off. I just haven't had time to edit it together because I'm percolating it myself as I go through this. But, you know, I know what my daily schedule is here. It's go to gym, it's have a protein shake in the morning. You get like an apple mid-morning. Then I know the range of things I can have for lunch. And it only really starts to fall apart kind of evenings, even I have kind of like on lock. It's weekends and it's social events that are the danger zone. You know, that's when you're at an event or it's a social thing or it's your birthday, and that's when you can kind of like lose it. But I think the addition of, like, I did find after a month that alcohol was more tempting. But after 3 months of not drinking, it had enough momentum that I didn't just go straight back into drinking red wine or beers or whatever it might be. I would have like a shot of Late Noble Harvest with ice or something like that, you know? Because honestly, if I could just drink full glasses of Late Noble Harvest, I'd do that instead of like normal white. Like, in the same way in which if chocolate milkshakes had the same calories as a light beer, you would never see me drinking a beer. I'd just be drinking chocolate milkshakes all day long. Like, they're objectively nicer drinks.
More anyway, delicious, yes.
I'm going to go off on a thing. So anyway, I at the end of that 4 weeks, or about 3 weeks in, I was like, okay, cool, I'm maintaining, but I'm not losing. And I'm stuck around, you know, 88.8, 88.5, and I do want to get down to about 82 or 80. So I went back to my doctor, and I am back on Ozempic. So okay. I got another prescription, and the goal here is to, over the next 3 months, because I'm actually going on holiday in 3 months, and it's a place with sun and sand. So I've now got like one of those 3 month, you know, missions to get kind of beach ready, I suppose. Last week I did a 0.25. Last night I did a 0.5. So I'm really kind of like, I'm doing a shorter ramp up to the
Okay, so weekly you're ramping up. Okay, cool. I think also because your body, even though you've been off of it for a bit, you're it's familiar to your body. Your body's receiving this input or this substance, but it, like, the brain recognizes it and the body recognizes it, so it knows what to do with it. And also, you initially, we were really scared because we were like, I don't want to be gnar 24/7, you know? So you kind of know now what it did in your body and what level of gnar you can deal with.
Totally. And since I basically had, my only real side effect was, I remember when we went up to 0.5, I had fatigue because just taking in less energy. And then on the full dose, I had headaches for a while, right? But that's not nausea and stomach upsets and stuff. It's relatively mild for me. So I thought I would kind of like risk it and contract the period a little bit. Mm. I didn't want to do another 4 weeks of 0.25 and and all that. So and I mean, it's really, I can really tell it's working in that I couldn't finish breakfast, and over the weekend I was having smaller meals, and I'm down. So I've been on this plateau of 88.8, and I'm now down to 87.7. So just over a kilo in the last 2 weeks. And 87 is also, for me, like, I haven't been below 89 since I got married like 5 years ago. So every kilo, every time I break it, it's a break point for me. But yes, 84 will be a big one because that's how much I weighed when I got married. And then, you know, I don't think I'll probably stop before I break 80. But if I went down into the 70s, that'd be crazy. But I don't suspect I'm going to have to. I think I'll be quite happy at around 82. But yes, so this is an interesting contrast in approaches, in that you've continued. And part of your frustration is also that you're paying like 2,000 rand a month or something to not go anywhere.
This is the thing. I may as well have just taken a break with you at the end of 12 weeks and then just like seen what happened again, and then picked it up again. Exactly what you've done, except I am now 2 months. I'm one pen's worth out of pocket where you're not.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, weight training, this is called periodization, where you do waves of muscle gain and then fat loss, cuts and bulks and all that kind of thing. And I don't know, I don't have no science on this, and maybe we'll look into it, but it could be that, you know, a more effective way to use Ozempic is to do a 3-month course, taper off for a month, and then back on or something like that. Maybe like, because you certainly do adapt, right?
Yes. And I suppose also that our prescriptions were different from the get-go. Like you did the standard 3 months. You go from 0.25 all the way up to 1 milligram and then reassess, okay?
Yeah.
Whereas my doctor's plan was obviously from the get-go, do a 6-month stint and then you should be done. You should be where you want to be. And it's a 6-month stint on a maintained lower dosage, right, the 0.5. So I can see kind of, and also subsequently, I have to just say, this is a maybe TMI for our listeners, but I may as well share it. We've spoken about my boobs volunteering as tribute when I lose weight, and they have officially volunteered again as tribute. And I have been for some time now, for years now, been looking at breast augmentation. So I had a consult with a plastic surgeon, and this 2 weeks ago or a week ago. And so when you fill out your forms, you have to say what medication you're on. And so I obviously disclose all the medication that I'm on, including Ozempic. And I walk in, I sit down. He says, okay, why are you here? I tell him what the reason for my consult is. He flips open the file. He looks up. He goes, why are you on Ozempic? That's like just, I was like, I feel normal. Wow. Like, why do I feel like I'm in trouble? However, so the reason I'm sharing this here is because he said that Ozempic is a very effective tool. He agrees it's a very effective tool, but he feels that it is abused or misused in people who don't necessarily have a significant enough amount of weight to lose. And in the long term, he is skeptical about the use of the drug in the long term. Just because it's a diabetic medication doesn't mean that it can necessarily be continued long term if you are not diabetic. And right, sure. That he said we don't know enough about its long term use to say yet whether it is, you know, good or bad. And then I'm hearing and listening to a lot of other things where people are like talking about microdosing on a permanent basis, like microdosing even a dosage below the 0.25 milligrams.
Right. Sure.
I think it was on Diary of a CEO, someone shared on the WhatsApp community a podcast, a doctor that was being interviewed on that podcast, where she discusses microdosing GLP-1s, you know. So there's a lot of conflicting information, but also for our listeners, why I wanted to share this was the reason why he asked about Ozempic is because if you're going in for any kind of surgery, you need to be off of the medication for at least 3 weeks before you can have surgery, because it slows down the digestion in the gut, the way food is digested in the gut. And when you go under general anesthetic, you could, if there's food in your gut, you could asphyxiate. So
you're supposed to be all nil. That nil sans mouth, the most annoying phrase I've ever come across. In that, like, we live in a country where most people don't speak English, never mind freaking Latin. You know,
exactly.
Why do they just simplify that language?
They could just say you have to be fasting for a 48-hour period or a 24-hour period. Yeah. Just use like
do
something
not
more generic.
24 hours.
So you don't eat for 24 hours in any general operation, but because the medication slows down your gut, you actually need more than 24 hours as a person who's on Ozempic. So the safest way to go is 3 weeks off the medication to make sure everything's safe in your surgery. So
it's interesting
that
3 weeks is what he kind of chose as the amount of time it takes for it to run out of your system. You know, I mean, I could tell from how fast food moves through you, that's probably 2 to 3 weeks is about right, I guess. Because you do become more regular as you go off it as well. Interesting. So yeah, it's what a cursed life. You know, it's like, yes, you can have big boobs, but you have to be unhealthily obese for it to happen. You know, and then you like, yay, I'm finally my healthy weight. And then it's like, oh no, can't have boobs though.
Yeah. And then also, when you go to the plastic surgeon for like any kind of breast augmentation or anything, they're like, well, before we can do surgery on you, you have to lose weight. We can't, there's no point in doing the surgery if you're not at a healthy BMI. And there's no point in doing a breast surgery and then you lose like 10 or 15 kilograms and then everything just sags and then we have to redo it again.
Yeah, so totally.
for health reasons and aesthetic reasons, they always say if you have more weight to lose, then you should probably lose that first before we can do the surgery, because otherwise the skin just stretches and
Right. It's surprisingly responsible from plastic surgeons who I think had accumulated a bad rap for being fast and loose with the rules and giving people exactly what they wanted, no matter how bad it made them look. And for, because everyone knows there's, it's a little bit like, I suppose, dentistry, in that there's good boob jobs and there's bad boob jobs and everyone could tell, right? So yeah. I imagine the people who want to really succeed in the field have to be like quite meticulous about how they do it. They're not just like,
I think also their integrity. Like this guy happens to be quite a conservative. He takes quite a conservative approach, and he's not the first guy I've seen. I've seen other doctors as well. But then I have friends who in the UK have been to doctors, and they're just like, "Oh, why don't you go bigger? Your frame can accommodate it." You know?
Oh wow!
And this person is like a stick person, small, and they're like giving her a double D or an E cup. Breast, you know, so and right. If you're happy with that, that's fine, but then you have other doctors who are just like, go conservatively, and it makes sense to me because you got to take a person's aging into consideration and skin stretching, and like you would with any kind of weight loss surgery, you know, a lot of bariatric surgery patients also who want to have their loose skin and whatever removed. To give your patient the best result and a better quality of life, you have to kind of advise them responsibly. It's not just about the money and the doing the surgery, you know?
Yeah. And I imagine you're just doing a cost-benefit analysis about buying new bras. It's actually cheaper to get breast augmentation than it is to just keep buying new bras, hey?
Buying new bras, yeah. I also breastfed two kids, and it's your age and a significant amount of weight loss, and shame. Life's been unkind to these
heavy
puppies.
Boob fruit. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of responsibility of doctors and so on, we're going to spend just the next 5 to 10 minutes talking about like one of the big topics of Ozempic that we haven't yet covered, which is compounds, generics, and fakes. So historically what happened is that Ozempic was released. It obviously was for diabetics at first, and then they discovered its kind of weight loss potential, and it started being used off prescription for weight loss, often in a medical context as well, like pre-surgery or whatever it might be, or pain relief because weight is causing a negative effect on someone's lifestyle. But there was a massive shortage of supply, which is now, I think my impression is that it is less of an issue. It seems to have been available whenever I did that initial phone around to 10 pharmacies, and over half of them had stock on hand, some were expecting. And the FDA allowed laboratories to compound Ozempic because it's not that complicated a molecule so they could essentially create generics, even though the brand still had this ownership of Ozempic and semaglutide, being Novo Nordisk, right? So compounds are available. Now, as the production has been ramped up, there's less, that is going to start ending or has ended. I'm not exactly sure the status of it in America or Europe, but there's less of that compounding available. However, there are still generic versions of semaglutide and other drugs available on what we shall cheerfully call the black market. And I just want to chat to you a little bit about them because it provides an interesting choice and paradox for people who want to use Ozempic but don't have the money for it, which is almost all of us. No one in the WhatsApp community is like, oh yeah, I just bought another 4 pens or my, you know, and it's all good. Like,
yeah,
it's
no
extremely
one's
expensive.
Like ecstatic about the money that they're out of pocket and they're like, oh, this is nothing, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. So it's very tempting when you finish your prescription, or if you've never managed to have a prescription because it's just too expensive, if you're presented with a half price option, of course it's tempting to consider buying that and trying it out. Have you chatted to anyone or had any experience with compounds and generics, Charlene?
No, not compounds and generics, no.
Right. So I haven't come across them personally, but we have heard from some members of the community who have or are considering it. So And I've been thinking about it a lot. And the monologue that I have for you here, and Charlene, feel free to interrupt me here, but this is my take on it. And obviously, both Charlene and I have been advised by our GPs to use the real thing, right? Every GP you talk to will say that. And to a certain degree, it's very easy to go, oh, well, that's a big pharma thing. Of course, they're not going to, they can't, for legal liability reasons, recommend you use anything other than the real thing. That's obvious. And there are these generic options available. There's Ozempic, there's various others. But so two things. Number one, obviously, we're not doctors and all the appropriate T's and C's there. Number two is that everyone listening to this is an adult or should be and can make their own decisions. So, you know, we're also not your parents. But my thoughts are thus, you can get generic Ozempic if you get it for a good price. If someone is selling it to you and they personally have had good results with it, like results are a certain form of proof in that it is definitely doing something. If they have all their teeth, then it's probably not meth. So that's great because there are lots of things that can make you lose weight. Probably drinking pain thinners or injecting into yourself will make you lose weight, but it'll also kill you. If they have had good results and they're selling it to you, cool. By cool, I mean use at your own risk. We don't know what's in those. You don't know what's in it. The person who's selling it to the person who's selling it to you doesn't have to explain. Like, none of us have the science understanding to even to test it. You can't take it to a lab and say, tell me exactly what is in this. So it could be perfect, pure semaglutide like Ozempic, or it could be, you know, half strength, or it could be something that's made in a lab that doesn't have the same hygiene controls and maybe it's got something in it. Who knows what? And obviously, you know, there's market forces at work here. So let's say that there's a lab in some country and they're making compound Ozempic. It doesn't really make sense for them to make it full of arsenic so that people die because then they lose their customers. The thing that makes the most sense is for them to make Ozempic that works, maybe make it as cheap as possible, but make it sure it works so that you get recurring customers. It's when you start to get to other products, like when they're saying that they've got tirzepatide or retatrutide, which is Mounjaro, and retatrutide is a not yet available version of a GLP-1 with, I think it's like 3 or 4 receptor agonists. What makes the most sense in terms of market forces is that it's all Ozempic, because none of us can tell the difference between a 16% loss every year and a 21% loss every year, which is kind of like the difference between Ozempic and Mounjaro. Like, you can't tell, no one could tell, right? So it makes more sense for them to just put the cheapest thing available in there, which is semaglutide. So never mind the fact that if someone tells you that they've got retatrutide, they don't. It's in stage 3 trials. It is not available. Cannot buy it. Doctors don't have it. Doctors claiming to be on it and testing it are not. It's nonsense. It's still under testing. And the company who owns it, Novo Nordisk or whoever, might be an Eli Lilly thing. I'm not sure who the brand is that owns it. They're not sharing that secret formula with anyone. They're not testing it on anyone in public. It is under very, very strict NDA. So I've now completed my rant. Charlene.
Okay. So when you asked if I had a discussion with anyone on generics, I hadn't. But retatrutide, which isn't a generic to Ozempic, it's a different drug in the sense that it is, like you said, it's a 3 receptor agonist. That I've know some people who have been acquiring that and have seen really good results. And I have to kind of, I guess, agree with what you're saying. I'm wondering if it isn't just Ozempic that is,
it's gotta be.
Like,
I mean, it might be Mounjaro, but for me, if I'm making generic GLP-1s, I'm not going to sell you the most, I'm not going to sell you the more expensive one when I can make you the cheapest one and put it in a tirzepatide bottle and say that's tirzepatide. Like,
and what I've ascertained is that the cost on these items, or the cost on this particular one, is kind of the same as one pen of Ozempic. However, you do fewer clicks and it lasts longer. The pen lasts longer. So then when you start doing the numbers, the numbers game, you see that it works out slightly cheaper because one pen lasts you longer. And also but then again, we're not scientists, we're not doctors. Ooh, I'm sorry. We don't know if it is as effective or more effective, because you're not going to, And I haven't spoken to anybody who has been on Ozempic and then decided to change to maybe because Ozempic works out too expensive. I want to have a pen that lasts me longer. So if I can get the same or a better result on a different drug, essentially, for slightly cheaper, then I'm going to go for it. And I won't lie, I have toggled with the idea to get like a generic or another name brand if it works out cheaper, to be like, okay, so if I can pay a little bit less and get at very least the same result as I'm getting on Ozempic, then maybe that's worth it for me, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess, like you say, it's a personal preference. Because if you're talking to people and they're like, I see great results, it's working for me. Exactly like you say, you're not going to be able to, we're not scientists. We can't determine like, because supposedly the one that works on the three hormones, you see a 25% a weight loss.
Percentage weight loss over a year or whatever they quote.
Percentage weight loss over a year. And the thing is, you'd have to be on it for a year as in parallel to another person on this on Ozempic or like a original Ozempic drug, like you, for example, would have to take it for a year, and I would have to take the other one for a whole year, and then we would have to compare. But then also, you're a guy, I'm a girl, hormones. So how do you actually know whether you're getting a better result or just the same result at the end of the day, and you're saving a couple of bucks, but you don't actually know what you're taking? So I think it's a personal choice. And again, if you're like, and I will be honest with you, I'm the type of person who'll be like, okay, this person's hair isn't falling out and they haven't lost their teeth and they've been on it for like 6 or 8 months. So I'll give it a bash. I don't know. You know, I mean, I've taken in my life all sorts of bloody diet pills and things that you could not get from a doctor, or should only get it from a doctor. But then you go to some beauty or diet clinic and they give you these bloody injections. I've been on injections for weight loss before. I don't even know what the hell was in those injections, but you go, it's like a weight loss program.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've all just got like promising names like hyper lean and thermogenics and all that kind of stuff.
And the thing is, these weight loss clinics or these aesthetic clinics who do these things, and I've heard as well from other people who it's Ozempic, I think, actually, now that you mentioned it earlier, it jogged my memory. That there is, someone told me that they know a lady who runs a beauty or an aesthetics clinic, and you pay a monthly amount and you go every week to have your injections administered, and they give you a diet plan and eating plan to follow. And instead of injecting yourself, you go weekly, you get your injection, and then you do your weigh in and you check.
That was the initial, the same structure as the salon that I approached to sponsor this show before we even started making it. That's how they work, in that you go in weekly, they give you a plan. And what it adds is accountability, expertise, the feeling that you're safe in the hands of a doctor as opposed to doing it yourself. So that's the value that they add, but it's not cheap. I can't remember the pricing, but you know, obviously there's a premium for having a doctor take care of you.
Yeah, because now you're not just paying for the medication, you're paying for the service of like a dietitian and somebody monitoring your progress and whatever. So I think also, and then also, I mean, you get a lot of bodybuilders and people who do fitness training, they go to the local supplement shop where you buy your shakes and whatever, and then there behind the counter, there's a, oh, let me sell you this or sell you that. There's, you know, there are these places that sell black market things for either weight loss or muscle gain or some kind of body enhancement. And I guess because it's not regulated, that's where the risk comes in, because you don't know what it does in terms of kidney failure. You don't know what, and you don't know what exactly is in it. Whereas if you're getting it prescribed by a doctor and you're getting it over the counter at your local pharmacy, you're getting it in the dosage that you're supposed to get it, you're getting it in, you know, its purest approved form. And any medication has risks. Any medication you take has side effects and has a certain amount of risks, which is why a medical professional is asking you the questions of. I mean, I'm not judging it. If you want to buy your stuff off the black market, you go, be happy, do it. For me, with this particular medication. What if I hadn't seen my, I think also the reason why I would probably be more open to considering getting a black market version of it or a generic version of it is because I had already consulted with a doctor and my assessment was done. My mental health, my other medication that I'm taking, all of that stuff has been taken into consideration with a medical professional. I think for me, where it becomes really risky is, and even before my doctor had recommended Ozempic to me, I knew about people and friends who are on these black market things. And I did not choose to go that route because I know my hormones are haywire. I'm on an antidepressant. And I don't want to mess with those things now with taking a medication. Because, I mean, you could be taking some herbal medication like St. John's wort, okay, which my GP told me is actually one of the herbal medications that causes the most interference, or that causes interference with most other medications that you can take. So you're thinking it's a herbal medication, it's like, and it's so good for you, and but there's very few other medications that you can take whilst on St. John's wort without it being, there being contraindications, you know?
Yes,
you can't take a, you can't take a cataplexy on an empty stomach, or you can't take a ibuprofen and this medication together when you're on flu, or when you've got the flu,
wine.
You know?
Classic contraindication so there.
Exactly. So these are the types of things that I think would be my biggest worry, because my doctor has asked me, what other meds are you on? The same way this plastic surgeon asked me, what other medications are you on? And when he gave me the pack after I left there with my quotation, there was a long list of stuff that he said a week or two before your surgery, you cannot take X, Y, Z. Don't drink this. Don't drink that. Don't drink any anti-inflammatories. So those are the things that we as laymen don't know, you know? And so you're like, oh, I want to lose the weight. Let me just take this thing. And a big thing for me is mental health, because this this particular medication for me can affect your mental health in a big, big way. If you already suffer from depression, you might be losing the weight. But because depression is, not to generalize, but for the most part, being in a state of depression, you already have a no list for life, or like you can't even lift your head up off the pillow on a normal day. And then you're introducing a medication that suppresses the part of your anatomy or your brain or the chemical makeup and the hormones in your body that give you the
dopamine
list for food,
response from food.
The dopamine response from food and from things. So you're like, these are the things that I would just caution anybody on and be like, just think about it, because I would feel more confident knowing, okay, my doctor has said, so if, for example, if I were to go on like a generic, maybe Ozempic, and maybe I'm rationalizing it to myself. I'm like, okay, at least my doctor knows I'm good to be on this medication, so I am okay. But then I arrive at the question, like, I don't know what's in there. Like, so now I'm thinking, okay, so my doctor said I'm okay to be on Ozempic. Cool. So I know that mental health and da-da-da-da-da, for the most part, it won't. And I've been on Ozempic. So if I want to change to like a generic or a black market version or whatever, then I'm sure I'll be okay. But I don't know what's in there.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. It's the same concept of, like, if it makes sense to cut a drug with something cheaper, then drug dealers will do that because it raises their margins, right? So, But you make it, I think an excellent point that you make there is that in my case, I'm not taking any other medication. If I took a generic version of Ozempic and I started noticing negative side effects, I'd be like, okay, cool, let me stop that. That's clearly is the problem. Whereas if you're on antidepressants or anything else for treating your hormones or whatever, then you get interactions that you might not expect. And obviously with Ozempic, those have been tested and they do know what those interactions are. Whereas it's those multiple factors. If you suddenly start feeling bad, it might not be the Ozempic. It might be the Ozempic's interaction with your antidepressant.
Like,
with there's
just too
many
weird
factors going on. Yeah. So to wrap it up, dear listeners, if you can scrape together the budget, get the real thing. If you can't, you're not your parents. And I think just use, if you are a person who gets scammed on the phone a lot, then don't buy generic Ozempic. If you consider yourself to have a pretty good sense of like intuition, and you know, you can look at the branding on the box and talk to the person who's selling it to you and like hear where they're getting it from and see what results they've gotten and ask them about their side effects if they've had any. Like, if you can do an amount of fact finding that makes you feel comfortable, then at least you can make what you consider to be an informed choice. Yeah, it's a calculated risk. Yeah. And I actually don't know. I'd be interested to find out. I don't know what the price differential is, whether it's half or whether you're paying about 70% of the price of Ozempic. I don't know. But maybe we'll find out. We'll do some research and figure that out. We're going to wrap it up there because we hit 45 minutes on this episode today. It's been a bumper, but we're only doing it every 2 weeks. I will also, in the WhatsApp community, I took a video of myself surgically extracting Ozempic from the tips of my unused pens, which I'm going to edit together and I'll throw it into the WhatsApp community. So you can check out how to do that. You have to use these scary diabetic needles. And I do feel like a bit of a crackhead. And then lastly, if you've noticed, I don't know if any of you have noticed, but our Instagram page is down because it's been blocked by Meta. All of my accounts actually got blocked, and I run, as someone working in marketing and advertising, I run about 8 different Instagram accounts. I've regained most of them, but not the Ozempic Diaries one. So that's down right now. I'll try and get it back, try and put it back on the on Meta, but we'll see. Thank you very much for listening. Charlene, thanks for your time. Well, tell me about your next 2 weeks before we meet again. What's the plan here?
Same old. I'm making no real changes. I'm staying the course. I'm having my protein. I find that, like you say, having a protein shake in the morning, start your day with a protein shake, I find that very helpful. And especially on training days when I hit the gym. I watched a video the other day where, like, I used to train fasting. Like, I'd always hit the gym fasting on an empty stomach. And there's a doctor that I follow on social media, and she was like, for women, that's actually the worst idea. Women, in the same way that ice baths are great for men, it can kind of have the opposite effect for a woman. So I don't train fasted anymore. I try and have a protein shake or something on my training days. And I find that that has given my gym days, has made me feel much better in the gym and more energized. Right. Yeah. And I'm on a testosterone cream now that my doctor prescribed. And I know it, maybe it's a placebo effect. Maybe it's all in my mind, because you're supposed to only starts working like 3 months in, and I've only been on it for just shy of a month, but I feel like the clouds are lifting, and I'm due to start estradiol now for my estrogen as well. And I think from here on, I feel so good. I feel really, really good. And it's so nice to be able to finally say that. So I'm staying the course, taking my hormone replacements, drinking my protein, or eating my protein and drinking my protein shakes, and 3 gym days a week, lots of water, same old, same old.
Speaking of, I have now joined the Stanley mug revolution. Today is my 45th birthday, and I have a 1.18 liter Stanley mug in my hand. It's not bright pink like Charlene's. It's a kind of a, I don't know, like, is this navy
blue? No, like a
deep dusky blue, right? That's what I thought.
Yes, like a dusky blue. It's very nice. And it suits you.
Yeah. Yes. So this Ozempic Diaries podcast, not sponsored by Stanley at all.
Sponsored by Stanley. But certainly very useful little tools.
And by little, you mean something I could brain someone with. I mean, I could do curls with this thing when it's full of water. It's crazy.
It's true.
Right.
Okay. Well, and for good luck.
Yeah,
and happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. We will get together in 2 weeks, and we'll see how staying the course and going back on treats us both. Cheers.
Well, are you having birthday cake, by the way? Are you indulging for your birthday?
I got back from gym this morning, and my son had made a cake, which was an apple with candles in it, surrounded by little bits of druivors.
Which was extremely adorable.
I'll send you a picture. It's great. He still expects real cake at the end of the day.
We're having a cake, right? What is this voodoo?
Completely.